Hi there, my name is Emiliana Corrin. For the past 2 years, I've been on a journey, getting involved in youth leadership and community work. I've met some pretty incredible people along the way who've challenged me, taught me, and shaped how I see the world. I'm still figuring things out, like everyone else, but I've been so lucky to cross paths with these change builders. I have sat down with each of them, asked them questions about their own journeys, and have given you the opportunity to listen in. Hopefully, by the time the episode ends, you'll have learned some lessons that it took me several years to understand. It'll serve as a blueprint whether you're a youth, an adult, a mentor, and whether you're experienced or just getting started in your own journey. Today's episode, we're going to be listening to a conversation between me and Eric Landbloom. Eric was my assigned mentor at the Rotary Youth Leadership Awards, RYLA. He helped me face several challenges inside the program, a weekend in Tallulah Falls, Georgia, and he also helped me navigate challenges outside. I think he's one of the most influential leaders that I've heard today. He's a Marine Corps veteran who's dedicated the rest of his life to really teaching others how to lead and how to leave a legacy. Our conversation centered on those themes of what does successful mentorship look like and how do we achieve it? So let's go ahead and listen in. I've known you since RYLA, which for me was one of my first service spaces through Interact Club at my high school. When I was at RYLA, I realized that we weren't just sitting at a conference room and we were actually being leaders instead of just talking about it. How do you define active leadership or service in a way that moves beyond those abstract concepts to something that's achievable for young people?
Well, first one is what I thought of, especially your class year. It was the inclusivity of the people. Like you and Mia had great inclusivity with other students, with other RYLA participants. And that became the very first stepping stone into the larger world. And I always marvel about how when we take this abstract, this philosophical idea and trying to teach it, it ends up being more about trying and failing, but also just, you know, listening to how you include somebody into your space, how you bring them along on your journey. I think we talked about that in the keynote, where it's like you're going a certain direction and you find your like-minded people going in the same direction. And you just say, hey, come along with me. Let's go do this. And you find yourself leading others to the same goal.
Your military and post-military career has been defined by the philosophy of preparing others to lead beyond you. What made you realize that mentorship and empowering others needed to be kind of the defining moment of your career? Because I feel like we live in such I-centered spaces that we stop thinking about leadership from an I and about a you, if that makes sense.
Does, because when you started that question, it brought me back to, like, no kidding, my very first 4 years in the Marine Corps when I was an enlisted special ops Marine, and my gunnery sergeant, who's an E7, looking down at me as an E5, and as soon as I picked up E5, he's like, you don't have much time left here. You need to make sure these guys are ready to take over your space, your role, because you're going on to bigger and greater things, and these guys are going to be stuck with me, and I would like to have them, you know, prepared for what you've given me. And so that becomes the pretty much my career thesis. So when I went on to be a pilot, that always stuck with me, for the fact that it was my responsibility not to just take charge of a situation, but teach those who will actually see the situation again and be able to perform better than I did. We look at that as, you know, when we, you know, think about how we work with each other, or, you know, even when you work you know, amongst your classmates or within your school, you know, you're going to have new people joining you, and you have people further ahead of you who are about to leave, and you want to grasp as much knowledge as you can from them. But you also, when you bring in your inclusiveness, you want to teach your new people what you've learned so far, so they can be almost independent to a point where they allow you to learn more, because they're going to take the roles that you're doing right now, help you out, and allowing you to look future and grow into your next role.
You and I, we first kind of connected during the most physically intimidating challenge at Ryla, I'd say. It was the gorge of about 1,000 steps, if I remember. I was at that point recovering from a knee re-injury, and I remember I was wearing Converse, and about 40 steps down, I just felt like it was truly impossible. And I distinctly remember that you stayed with me for a while, like pushing me forward. I was walking with Mia, and both of us were so tired and keeping pace with us, even like wearing a weighted vest. And you said something along the lines of talking about impossibility being in the mind and challenges having to come from inside. And that has stuck with me a lot, how guiding youth through those moments or in the past has shaped your ideas of impossibility, really where your mentality was shaped. Did you have leaders before you that kind of made that path, or did it all come from you?
I tell you, it's going to be 80% of willpower from inside me, but there was good examples or good opportunities as well. I grew up in North Dakota. North Dakota is cold. It's like snows 9 months out of the year. And you just got used to dealing with that hardship of, you know, you have to go outside, you have to, you know, you're playing your sports and that type of thing. But I also had a dad who was preparing us for, you know, independence. And in that independence, every August, we go out camping in Western Montana. Well, camping for my dad in our family is not the same camping that every average American thinks of. For us, it was wilderness survival training. It was, here's your backpack, here's your, you know, pack your backpack, pack your food. You got 3 days. I'll meet you on the other side of the mountain. And it wasn't, you know, the fact that we're with dad and learning from dad. It was more of, I taught you this. Now let's see what you can do on your own. So that becomes one of those opportunities, but also, you know, those, hey, you know, how do you reach inside? How do you use your emotional intelligence, or just how you just use your emotions to create willpower? And for me, understanding that the willpower is the desire to become, to prove everyone wrong. That was always my biggest thing. Is when you're five foot four, probably not even 100 pounds, you want to prove everyone wrong around you. And so that was my determination as a young, you know, as a young adult before I became, you know, had my growth spurt and become a 6 foot, 100 cross country runner, 140 pound cross country runner. I had that desire built into me to prove everyone wrong. So when I did hit my growth spurt and I did develop my talents and skills, that character was built within me from that junior high kid who was tired of being not even a blip on the radar, and then becoming more because I wanted it so bad. It created a drive. It created a need to be something better. And the only way you're going to get better is putting yourself through the most challenging environments, putting yourself through the most challenging scenarios that are out there, and just building your resilience by doing it over and over. And so that for me became a big thing. So when we went on that hike through the gorge, putting on that vest for me was, I'm challenging myself.
Yeah, honestly, I think that we all had very different leadership styles and very different ways of approaching problems, which I still think we should have won the marshmallow challenge of the like tower. Personally,
yeah, well, I thought so too, because that was the best, you know, I don't know how many years I've been doing Ryla, but you know, that challenge when all you guys came together, and it wasn't somebody had a great idea. It was somebody contributed this, another person contributed that. It was just one beautiful thing on your first day.
Well, yeah, they had really assigned us those groups, and then they just told us we were going on a hike. And at the end of it, we had to do that activity. So by that point, Mia and I had bonded on the hike. I remember both of us were like at least mentally counting the steps down and having to say, oh, God, we're going to have to go back up this. This is hard.
After you go past the swinging bridge that, you know, kind of it all get, you know, sways unnaturally underneath you.
Yeah, that was very fun. I think I actually do have a picture of Mia and I on that bridge because we were both so scared. But the leadership that was not the leadership, the camaraderie, as you said, that we developed then definitely helped us in the challenge after that. And by the time that the program had ended, we all became much, much closer than honestly I expected. It was a very good group.
It was. It's now the standard that I look for now when I have my groups.
Do you think we, just to settle a personal score, do you think we were better than Sienna's group that we had before?
Well, Sienna's group had a lot of drama. And so she was unfortunately dealing with, you know, the the whole I don't want to say it too poorly, but you know, they had distractions going on. But what was I was fortunate with your group was there was no distractions. You all came together, you all got inclusive with each other, you all worked well together. We went on that stupid swing and scared the hell out of ourselves. So you know, was that year? No, we didn't have the swing that year. We had the saw. No, we had the saw thing, that big old log saw that could take your finger off. And you and Mia were working that thing like it was easy.
Oh, yeah. We were competing with other people. I remember we had the rope that you could pull yourself up on from the wood.
Oh, yeah.
That was definitely very fun. But yeah, no, I just wanted to bring that up because Sienna did go to my school. She's actually at Duke University now.
Is she really?
Yep.
Good for her.
Yeah, she's incredibly smart. I adore her. Yeah. But not to spoil your keynote for people who haven't gone to Rila and who, unfortunately, those people who won't be able to experience it. But you talked a lot about how many different definitions there are of service, not of service, of leadership. How many, like that you can go onto Amazon and you look up leadership and there's 50 billion books. I wanted to ask you what your definition of leadership is.
So that's the first thing I do with my leadership workshops is we define leadership for the units. Organization for me, leadership is the dynamic ability to move from one scenario to another scenario while inspiring and guiding others to come along the journey with you. And so, whether it's something simple like your group, where it's you're already inspired and you just want and you know what direction we're going and you want to be, I then can lead by just guidance, or you take another group and you lead by example, or, you know, and there's just so many, that's the dynamic portion of it. But the most important thing is you have an idea, you have a destination, and you have an idea of a path, like a pathfinder does, and people who are inspired by that will join you. And that's where the leadership comes from.
We've kept sort of in touch since Rila. I remember that I texted you right before I had a competition because I was in my hotel, essentially, and I was getting ready to fight. And my dad had come up to me and he said something like, well, you got to remember that half the challenge is in your mind. And I remembered that from Rila. And that whenever I feel myself slipping into that same doubt, that sentence of challenge in your mind and having to have the resilience to push through comes back. How do you make sure that those lessons of resilience stick with students who you mentor, from youth at UGA, RILA, to leadership developed?
I love using when I'm doing it on stage with young adults, I love using the box scenario where I told you guys how I was going to one of our training events is how to deal with high pressure situations, and that requires you to calm yourself down, and you get thrown into the ground with this box that's buried in the ground, and they put a top on you, and then they simulated burying you. When I found out that they're just throwing dirt on top and not really putting you underground, you get scared. You get all these fears coming up because, are you getting buried? Can you handle it? Are you going to run out of oxygen? You go through that whole freaking out. It's like being at the deep end of the pool with a weight on your foot. So we work through the mindsets of centering. And the first one is just the box breathing, just trying to be able to get your breath under control, because that's the one thing you can control. You control how you breathe, the pace of your breathing. And that in return calms the mind down. It takes down the triggers that are going off, or the synopsis going in your head, and it allows you to then find a little bit more focus, take away the edge of it. And then we talk about left-right coordinated movement, which is why I always go for a walk. If I'm stressed out, I'm going for a walk. I need something. But when you're in that box, you can't go for the walk. So you tap your toes left, right, or you tap your hands on your knees left, right. And you're working this whole balancing feature within the brain because it's a coordinated movement. Anytime you move your left hand, your right brain fires. When you move your right hand, your left brain fires. So by doing these coordinated movements, the firing of your brain on different hemispheres then starts to create a connection between the two hemispheres that allows everything to balance out. And then, of course, mindset scenarios in which you're thinking of, okay, a little warm, so it's no different than being on a tropical beach with high humidity. And you start putting yourself in that position, and you start actually sitting there enjoying your daydream while you're sitting in that box for, I lose track of how much time I spent in there. But it allowed me to show students that you're able to work through these self-doubts because the things you can control. You can't control, I'm the first one to tell you the truth. I can't control what thoughts come into my head, but I can tell you that by doing certain physical things, it helps take those spikes of thoughts out. They're there, but they're just not spiked. They're not heightened. They're actually thinking like when I'm a cross-country athlete or a track athlete and I'm doing my warm-up run. The run is there not just to warm me up, but also to center me, to get me back into focus of how I run my race. I don't worry about school. I don't have any worries about my social life. I just have that focus of how it allows me to focus on one singular thing, which is going to be that race. So for young adults, whether you're an athlete or not an athlete, it's the importance of understanding what you can control physically to make your mind not run away from you.
I can definitely resonate with that as someone who's been in the high stress scenario of college applications currently. I'll definitely be trying that out more.
That's not an easy thing to do because you're talking about if you went to Maslow's hierarchy of needs, we're talking about the sense of belonging, the sense of being loved, the security of being in a group, and you're trying to find this new tribe, this new group, and you want to be accepted. You have this want to, or no, it's not a want, it's a need. You have this need, every person has it, to be accepted, to be part of a group. So as you're going through these college applications, you're throwing your vulnerable self out there to be accepted by that university, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. You have worked with emerging leaders from high school students at RILA to MBA candidates. What's one key message you have for the leaders and mentors of those groups and of youth overall on how to prepare others to take their place?
First is, you're not going to experience everything. You're going to experience as much as you can. So to prepare yourself for experiences you're not sure you're going to have, or you're not going to, or your mentors aren't going to see, you need to seek out other ways to create that experience. And so as pilots, we spend time in the ready room. And the reason why is we spend time in the ready room because it's encouraged for us to sit in there and talk about experiences in the aircraft that not everyone's going to have. Somebody's going to have an aircraft that does something weird on them, and then they're going to talk to the other pilots about, hey, this is what happened when I was flying. These are the indications I got, and this is how I treated it, and I came back safely. And we do that because, like I said, we can't experience it all, but when we talk about everyone's experiences, we start getting our own toolkit of experiences from other people. And then when it's our, if it does happen to us, we have that information. This worked well, or this did not work well. And so we try to do that with many other pilots as you grow on. Well, as a leader, it's the same thing. And so that's the biggest thing I can tell most emerging leaders is find as many mentors as you can, read as many books as you can, be curious. Be curious about things that, you know, you think is, oh, this happens to everyone. No, it doesn't.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. I like that a lot. Very put yourself into a community. You can't lead alone. You have to have either guiding voices or guiding people. Mm-hmm. And I do love that idea that everybody's experience is unique. I'll stop telling myself that everybody did that bad on that test.
Well, no, because sometimes they do. But here's what the funny thing is let's look at some of the, and the only reason why I can understand this now, and I wish I could understand it when I was 20, is because by the time I grew into the person I am now, I surrounded myself, I got the courage to surround myself with those who took those risks. Think about, you know, we talk about the, oh my gosh, I'm losing names all of a sudden. Let's talk about the Tim Cooks of the world, the Phil Jacksons of the world, all those, you know, all these big successful people. The thing is, though, is they're successful is because they know how to work with others at the same level they are. So they're, you know, they're not, this whole it's lonely at the top is not correct. It is the ability to reach out to somebody else and have a conversation, an honest, vulnerable conversation of, I'm experiencing this. Have you ever gone through something like that? And trust me, you don't know if you can trust that person right off the bat. But to be able to get that trust, you have to actually be vulnerable to, you know, rejection about it. So you can find your tribe, we'll call it. And I don't like using the word tribe because I want to think it's one group. And I'll tell you, if you have five good tribes, that's as good as having the average of the five people you hang around. And so it's very, I find it very enlightening that, you know, the people that I've grown into, the groups I've grown into are the ones that help me continue growing. I feel like right now I am a 20-year-old with privileges because I am still learning. I get to go wherever I want to learn from whoever I want. And it fulfills me because I learned something about YouTubing, and God knows I'm not good at it, but it was still fun to learn, or something about photography or writing a book, you know, all these different things that I'm interested in. And I never thought that I would ever try to do, but here I am, I'm writing my first book. I've taken some great photographs. I go on great trips, you know, around the world with my wife. We get to do things that we took risks in learning and taking from other people to teach us how to do it.
If somebody listening has kind of thought through the process, done everything, and kind of taken in what we talked about challenges today, and they're just ready to ditch that idea that the challenge is impossible, and they're ready to just embrace the idea. What's the first concrete step that you recommend they take right now towards achieving that goal?
You have to understand that you need, this is one of these big brain things, but you need 10,000 repetitions of failure to get that first step of success. Let's go back to me YouTubing. I could not get past 20 views on my first 30 videos. I had to fail continuously to learn what got people's attention, why they would watch my stuff. Let's take trying to be a pilot in the Marine Corps. Only, I think it was a 39% dropout rate. And when I, by the time I graduated flight school, it was a 39% dropout rate or removal rate. So it was really tough to find the courage to spend 2 years of constantly every day new fights, new, you have to learn a whole new set of things, because that's the process of how fast you have to learn. By understanding that you can stumble, you can fail, but you, as long as you make the honest commitment to do it better next time, you're going to thrive. You're going to be successful. I didn't get through flight school so fast because I was good. I got through flight school so fast because I just made it every time. I didn't have to be great. There's people smarter than me that got better scores, but they didn't move as fast because they got so hung up in the details. They didn't realize that the game is just get past the next test, get past the next test, and then you'll find success when you're on the other end. Because then your confidence is there because you've been told you've made it.
Thanks for listening. I hope this conversation gave you something to think about, something to act on, and someone to become. You never really know your true potential until you get involved. So take that first step, no matter what it looks like. Until next time, keep building your change.